Nerds Plus is a podcast coming to you from inside the News Hub newsroom. But the views expressed here don't necessarily reflect those of News Hub as a company. That's because, and I cannot stress this enough, the hosts of this podcast are terrible people.
Welcome along, team, to a very, very special episode of Nerds Plus. I know I say this every week, but this one might be my favourite of the year. Yes, we've finally come to our Star Wars episode. And of course I invited Kate Roger back on the podcast. She is the reigning, defending queen of all things Star Wars. Joining her as well is Mr. Jordan Tinney, the indispensable Jordan Tinney. And to be honest, I'm not going to waste any more time. Of course we're talking Mandalorian. Let's just get straight into it.
It's too early for this level of eroticism, Jordan Tinney. Stop making such firm eye contact.
Goodness gracious.
Right. Well, in some ways, I think it's all been building up to this, team. The Star Wars chat and the galaxy of nerdiness. All things orbit the sun of Star Wars. Like, it's... Yes, there are many fandoms.
What does it look like, though? Is it like a Death Star, or...?
It could be. Exactly. It could be. There's so much fertile ground in Star Wars, and I don't think there's any fan base more passionate, and any franchise that's probably a affected me more than Star Wars, and across generations, it is the bright sun at the center of the nerd universe.
Isn't it weird? And I have so many conversations in and around this because I've had to convert some pretty normal people who are close to me in my life, including my husband-to-be, who, when I discovered I was pregnant to him, I made him sit down and watch all of the Star Wars films because I wasn't sure whether I wanted to have him around for the continuing lifetime of our child. He was shocked by that. Now he's not shocked by that. He actually enables my continuing and debilitating commitment to having Star Wars merch in my house.
That is, it's in the prenup. Must love Star Wars.
Yeah.
There's a clause that you can dodge like Revenge of the Sith, but other than that.
Give him a room. It's that easy. Put all your stuff in there. That's it.
I mean, here's a little behind the scenes thing for you. When you approach Kate Rogers' desk in News Hub, it is like a shrine to Star Wars. Like, I've always thought that Kate Rogers' desk, like her seat should float off the ground like Palpatine's throne. We were talking about this on the podcast last time. We were like, we're going to do a Star Wars special. Kate Roger hopefully will be here and she might float in on Palpatine's throne.
I am firmly on the light side of the Force.
Yeah, we've got Darth Zeno J in the house and we've got Grandmaster Roger.
Thank you.
That's cool. I've got Force Lightning.
Yeah, Force Lightning is absolutely the best power. Okay, we've got off the rails to start with.
Sorry.
But she has her merch desk. She's not Palpatine. She obviously uses a land speeder of some sort.
We've got one Jedi to my left. We have a Jedi. We've got a Sith to my right.
And I like to think I was great, but that's okay.
Stuck in the middle with you.
Before we get into the more operatic side of Star Wars with the Sith and the Jedi, the latest and greatest from the Star Wars universe is, of course, The Mandalorian, which is the launch title for Disney+. And this is a title that I honestly came to a little bit skeptically because I was extremely excited by the idea of a spin-off Boba Fett film, which was first planned, and the director of Logan was originally signed on to work on it.
Yep,
after Solo, after Solo didn't tank but didn't meet expectations, that scrapped, and then we got The Mandalorian. And so we'll go around the table and just get our first sort of impressions, reading the room. I feel like we might be on the same page, but who knows? I loved it. I'm loving it so far. And three episodes in, we've got a fourth one coming out on Friday. The number one thing that I love about The Mandalorian is that it's focused on an aspect of the Star Wars universe which I think hasn't been explored enough up until this point. And while I love the grand narrative of Star Wars, of pure good versus pure evil, the operatic side of it, I love the gritty aspect of it more in some ways. I love that the dirtiness of the Mos Eisley Cantina. I love the one scene where Darth Vader first introduces the bounty hunters in Empire Strikes Back. I loved how pockmarked their armor was. I loved the grittiness of their character design. I love that they didn't have lightsabers. They didn't use the Force. They just seemed like dirty, nasty people trying to make their way in a grim galaxy. And it gave this sort of sense of that real people lived in this galaxy and it was a war-torn place. And they weren't all monks or Sith, and they weren't these kind of archetypes of good and evil. Those were the moments where you really got to get a sense for the reality of the universe, and The Mandalorian is all that so far, and that's what I really love about it. And the from the set design, from the character design, the reliance on practical effects over CGI, all those elements sort of come together to me, and I love it. I love it so much. Yeah. Jordan, what do you think?
I'm going to say that I absolutely hate that Baby Yoda is so popular. I am so sick of it now. I was like on board with Baby Yoda, and now I'm just like,
Jordan.
Yes, Kate.
Get
out. Okay.
Get I'm out.
Don't
out
be every- that fucking guy, all right?
That's what I want to hear from you.
I'm looking forward to the merch. I'm looking forward to how popular that is. But yeah, overall, The Mandalorian, episode 1 and 2 kind of played it safe. It was really Deborah Chow's episode that absolutely killed it. Episode 3 is like just made it transcend where it was going. That whole like settlement into the whole lone wolf and cub storyline is, yeah, I adore it so much. And just like they're filling in things like in a way that's simple but effective, like because we've got a popular like character from it, so Baby Yoda, and now we have two sayings from it, which is "This is the way" and "I have spoken." Mm. And I'm like, that's insane.
And three eps.
Yeah,
and three
that's eps. Crazy that we already have so much meme material from 3 episodes.
Yeah, it's very memeable. Yes, Kate Roger, what are your top line thoughts?
Look, I know I'm only a quarter of the way through my coffee and you made me get up so feckin' early to do this.
Yes, because you fucking love me, Kate Roger.
Because I fucking love you. But I hear both of you talking about The Mandalorian. It's a TV show that I've only seen 3 episodes. It's less than an hour, and just over an hour and a half of content of it. And it makes me really weepy. Like, genuinely, everything about this pared back nature, the minute I settled into that first ep, agreed the grandness of everything with all of the chapters we see on the big screen. For me, the simplicity, the fact that it was stripped back and it became about moments of music and a stillness of something, that we had so few characters so we were able to connect almost immediately with them.
Yeah.
I watched the episode about 6 times over the course of maybe 3 or 4 days.
Awesome.
And I was very blessed to have it on a big screen for my first viewing because I went to the launch of Disney Plus in Sydney. And which kind of annoyed me because I had to watch it with other people, which normally doesn't bother me. But everyone was deeply respectful and it was great to see it on a big screen. But it occurred to me when I watched it again at home, this is one of those situations. And you know how I love going to the cinema where you don't need to watch this on the big screen. It looks beautiful. But actually it's more about the experience of the storytelling and the immediate access I had to the Mandalorian as a character. And then as we see the extras around him as such. And you were talking about the grittiness, Finn. For me, when I really knew that this was for me, when the door opened, and this is not a spoiler, and it's the first time we see stormtroopers, and you talk about how their armour is all dirty and mangled. It actually, of course, but it was turning to face the Mandalorian. They were stooped, they were beaten, they were kind of just aggro and angry, but I don't know, everything about the way they held themselves felt different. And I knew we were in a different universe, but still I was being comforted by the notion I was in the Star Wars universe because they were stormtroopers. So I could not be more sold. This was before I saw fucking Baby Yoda. I was already so on board. I loved his voice with the Mandalorian. I loved he was short and sweet with his answers, but I can't work out if he's good or bad. And all of that comes together for me in a very beautiful symphony.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's an easy analogue to say that it is a Western in space. And yes, it draws a lot from the Clint Eastwood tradition of the man with no name.
Definitely.
And very on the nose about that. And it's wearing that on its sleeve. But I would disagree with you a little bit, Jordan, in that episode 3 was actually my least favourite of the ones so
far.
Episode 1 and 2 were my favourites. At 2 particularly, because what 2 did for me was what you were saying, there's very little dialogue in episode 2.
It is
a journey of him with Baby Yoda, and just, it's him struggling. And it's this thing that I love about The Mandalorian is that he's obviously a badass. We get that sense that he's very capable. But he loses almost the entire episode 2.
Yeah.
He keeps getting the shit kicked out of him.
Do a pack of annoying Jawas.
And that fight he has with the Bighorn, there's a battle that he has.
Without
getting too far into spoilers, but he's muddy, he's covered in crap, he's struggling constantly.
Yeah.
And those elements for me, I was like, I love that, because so rarely do you see the hero lose and get his ass handed to him.
Mm.
And obviously there are things that happen in that episode that we'll get into a little bit later in spoiler territory, but that's something that I really like about this universe, is that they've clearly established from the get-go that he isn't your all-powerful kick-ass hero. He isn't the Luke Skywalker of the situation.
Yeah.
And that's something that really, really appeals to me.
Do you know the interesting thing when you talk about that, and this is not a spoiler, but some of his armour comes off at the end of that.
Yeah.
And it flaps around really unpleasantly and awkwardly. Yeah. That never happens in the movie.
Exactly.
And I just thought, maybe that just happened and they kept it that way. But it occurred to me that I'd noticed it, and I noticed it even more on repeat viewings and learned to really, really love it. Because usually when you get beat up, you still look cool. There's maybe you've got a limb missing or you've got a really excellent
scar. Like a slight
scar.
Cut on your
armour.
Yeah,
but it's all pretty sexy. Nothing sexy about a flapping piece of body armour.
Yeah.
It was cool.
And that's so you were saying that you don't think it loses anything coming to the small screen. Do you think that... So has this given you hope for what the future of Star Wars is going to be on the small screen? Because obviously we've got Kenobi in the pipeline.
Yes.
Six episodes locked in with Ewan McGregor. I'll be interested to see...
Your friend, Ewan.
Oh, my mate.
Your buddy.
Did I tell you guys about how this one
did
time...
Did you go to LA?
Sorry.
What?
Didn't mean to bring
Thank
it up.
Thank you so much
Didn't
for giving me another opportunity.
Up.
No, that's the rest of the podcast.
Didn't mean
Saw
to bring it up.
Pacino as well, guys. Just, I've got rarefied Pacino air on me. Breathe the same air as De Niro.
Anyway, moving on.
Moving on.
Do I think it's destined for the small screen? Do you know, we're sitting here talking about The Mandalorian. All I do in between the episodes now, because I got the first two bang, but since those and up until the third, couldn't stop talking about it. We're now waiting for the fourth on Friday. Do you know what you think about the Game of Thrones notion of the fandom fueling all of the speculation and then building the hype for the next? Imagine if we go to Rise of Skywalker and every half an hour the film stops and you get to sit around and go, what the fuck? You know, all of that, I didn't think, and when I first saw the first episode and it finished, I immediately wanted to watch another and another, and I know, in fact, we have some very close friends that are storing up all their episodes because they want to watch them all at once. I get that, and I get the bingeability of that, but I'm actually loving the hype that's building inside of me between each of them. And then I rewatch because I know this is embarrassing, but I will start again and just watch all of them and then watch the fourth.
Yeah,
and then watch all of them and then watch the fifth. Oh, good. I'm in the right room.
You're definitely in the right room.
And that makes me happy. And the family does it too, which kind of makes me happy because I'm allowed to do it, that means. And it's... I'm into it, and I feel good that they're giving it this level of awesomeness with Jon Favreau overlooking it all. He's a great storyteller.
Incredible storyteller.
A great storyteller. The fact that you do have individual directors coming in and having, I think there's repeats as well, a couple of them do a couple of eps, and then the grand finale, of course, will be Taika.
Yes.
And apparently Favreau talks about he wants an individual stamp of the directors on each of the eps. I'm not necessarily feeling that, but then I don't know all of their work intricately, and we may see a very individual stamp of Taika at the end, which it might be a little bit weird.
Tonal whiplash slightly?
That's right, tonal whiplash. That's a good saying. Yeah. I'm going to steal that. but probably not. Because when we heard him as the voice of IG-11, it was very, it was still Taika, but not the Taika.
It was Taika,
it wasn't Korg Taika, was it?
Yeah,
he was very droid-like. And anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about
spoiler territory. We'll get into spoiler territory shortly, but a couple more sort of overarching things that I think about Mandalorian. We talked about this on the podcast last time, Jordan, but so much of the strength of this narrative, I think, comes from what they don't say and what they leave to your imagination.
Yeah.
And I think obviously this is heavily inspired by Boba Fett. We can get into what that tie-in possibly could be later on. But Boba Fett, for me, is this... this masterclass in how you create an iconic character by doing very little. The design of the Mandalorian armor is so stamped into the cultural consciousness, but Boba Fett never did anything badass, essentially, in the entire time he was in the Star Wars movies. All they did was have him come into shot and have everyone respond to him as if he is about to do something badass. And that is a better way to make a dangerous character.
That's true.
Don't have them do anything. Tell them that they at any moment might do something dangerous and let the audience's imagination run wild.
Yeah.
He has about four lines of dialogue across the whole films, and he became this, this almost blank slate or this outline of a badass that we fill with our imagination. And Darth Vader in some ways is the same. Darth Vader's on screen for 38 minutes across all three of the original films. And he is an icon in 38 minutes. And I think Boba Fett has a little bit of that to himself as well. And that's what I love about The Mandalorian. We still don't know his name. He is just The Mandalorian. He has very few lines of dialogue in each episode, but they do work. every single one gives you something about him, but not too much.
They stole them from me.
They stole them from me. Weapons are part of my religion.
Yeah. Like,
and all of those, and, which I, and they're giving us little flashbacks to his past, which we can get into momentarily. But yes, I love, like you say, it's stripped back, but it's stripped back across the board. The production design is stripped back.
Yeah, yeah.
Narrative is stripped back. Everything is understated. Mm. And I just think it's such a nice contrast to what Rise of Skywalker looks like it will be, which is the grand space
opera.
How
much can we cram in?
Which we've come to love.
Yeah.
We'll get into spoilatory just momentarily, but I just wanted to touch on, get your guys' gauge on where you think Rise of Skywalker is at for you in terms of hype level and what you're hoping and what you're afraid of heading into it.
You go.
I'm excited to see it finish, just to see how the trilogy winds out.
Wow.
See what the story ends
up
being.
I'm so excited, Jordan. So, I'm really excited for this to
finish.
I can
feel it wafting on your head.
If they had said Thanos was going to turn up in it, I would be like, yes, let's go. But no, I'm just overall excited to see. I just hope that whatever narrative they've tried to set in place does get some kind of resolution. But ultimately, we may not have everything be answered, which is unfortunate because it actually is a fun trilogy overall.
It just
doesn't feel like it'll be wound up in a way that will give it payoff.
Avengers Endgame was one thing, but I don't think there's ever been a film that needs to tie together this many plot threads and appease this many generations of fans. Like, the pressure on Abrams is phenomenal, particularly to the reception to Last Jedi. Mm. So, Kate, I'm just wondering how you feel heading into this as probably the greatest Star Wars fan I know of.
Star Wars fan.
You talk about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Mm. That was planned from the get-go.
Yeah.
And you had Feige at the top of that driving a narrative and weaving it between filmmakers and stories, finding the people that he wanted, like the Russos, and other directors and filmmakers and storytellers.
Yeah.
But at the heart of it, he was in control of what was going on, and he had an end game.
That's why she gets paid the big bucks, folks.
This is so different. You've got Lucas, and then the reins getting handed over. You've had a lot of people stirring the pot. Mm. You've had some great films. You've had, you know, some pretty dark parts of the of our experience. I'm talking to you, Phantom Menace. And we talk about the cutability of Baby Yoda, and we think about the times they've tried to make us snuggle things, and that hasn't gone well for them either. So, and you've also, as you mentioned, we are so fervent. Our demands are so great. They're so emotional. It's not, you know, will I enjoy it? Will I won't? It's, will you ruin my fucking childhood? These are big ticket items.
Yeah.
I went to my first major exposure as a tiny little New Zealand nerd was going to one of the Star Wars celebrations through work. And it was the 30th celebrations, you know, have these celebrations. And it took over the entire Staples Center in LA. And I always thought I was quite a nerd and that I was into Star Wars. I walked into this place and it blew my fucking mind.
Yeah.
I'd never seen anything like it. I had 3 days there with a camera to shoot some stories, which was just point the camera at a person and let them talk. I could have filed about 17 stories.
Yeah.
But I spoke to human beings who... it wasn't a laughter situation or I'm having a great time. This is my 3-year-old. His name is Anakin. Hardcore nerds.
Yeah, yeah.
They met on the Star Wars nerd circuit. They got married. They had lots of tiny little Jedis. It was really full on. I loved every minute of it, but it gave me an idea of the scope of what this means to it, particularly in America.
Yeah.
Force Awakens is still the number one grossing domestic film there. It made $936. Absolute fortune when it came out on opening weekend. So I got a real sense of what this means. It doesn't change how I felt about it, but I understood that it was a shared experience and that I could be standing in a bookshop in London at a Star Wars section to buy a book, and then a guy would come up from Venezuela and half an hour later we're still chatting. Mm. I love that's what Star Wars does, that it can break down barriers between a whole lot of different cultures and worlds and languages and all that kind of thing. So anyway, that's a long preamble to will I enjoy Rise of Skywalker? Mm. Of course I will. A couple of the first trailers I thought, and it completely antithesis to The Mandalorian. We got a lot of shit to get done in this film.
And I hope
like anything that JJ's, and he's a clever, clever storyteller, that he hasn't got a book given to him by Kathleen Kennedy where he has to tick all of those boxes.
I'm hoping, I know
he loved The Last Jedi. I know that he understands the different responses to it. He's been very open about how Rian Johnson did things. He said he would have done things differently, but he said every single director does do things differently.
Mm.
So it wasn't a slap. it's going to be interesting how it's going to tie all together. I don't think we should look at it and go, it has to be the best ever Star Wars
film. Yeah, of course.
Because I think that will set us up for just epic.
Well, that's the definition of toxic fandom, right? You must make it perfect for me, but by definition, if it's perfect for you, it's imperfect for someone else.
Yeah. Correct.
It's, you can't accept what it is.
I agree.
What, is there anything that concerns you heading into it, though? Like, is there anything that you're like, oh, God, I hope they don't do this?
No, I don't like to. I just don't like to think like that. I'm generally a positive person, so I'm always I'm always ready to go in, and I want to be impressed.
Yeah.
And unless I've been given massive reason not to, I think the concern I think you're alluding to, Jordan, is the shoehorning of Leia into this. I understand that. I can imagine. Can you imagine actually? JJ sitting there, he's got all of the content and all of the offcuts and the everything that was ever shot with her. I've got to say, it would be pretty easy to do a really simple narrative involving Leia. I originally was like, it's much better than CGIing her back in. And I know a lot of people had an issue with the floating back into the ship on Last Jedi. When I've rewatched that film, I don't love it. I don't love it. There's a few things in there that I don't love. But I fucking love Carrie Fisher. And I love the central character of Organa. And I want, if they're able to make that work for me, then I'm home and
I'm so with you. And on that Last Jedi, I mean, obviously we could spend an entire another episode talking about the Last Jedi.
Really good.
I actually loved it. I think Rian Johnson he took risks with the Star Wars universe, which I think was an incredibly bold move for a director to do.
Definitely.
I think J.J. Abrams, I love him, but in some senses he played it very safe with Force Awakens. And
he just gave us a new hope.
Exactly.
And we loved him for it.
Yeah. He gave us exactly what we wanted.
Yep.
And I think Rian Johnson did exactly the right thing, which was, this is not going to go the way you think, which is the great final line of that, of the first trailer for and that set us up for this amazing conclusion, and I love that he took us in some interesting directions, and he questioned the black and white nature of the universe, and he questioned, are the Jedi a fundamental force for good?
That's right.
Which is one of the only good things that I liked about the prequel series, for all the terrible things they did.
Yeah.
In his own ham-fisted way, George Lucas was trying to say, maybe
it's not all good here.
It's not all good and it's not all evil.
Yeah, maybe they're terrorists. Who knows?
Maybe they killed a whole lot of children.
And I think that particular moment with Leia floating back into the ship, I think what people, what twanged with people about that scene was, I just think aesthetically, it was on the nose. I think narratively it makes total sense.
They should have done it differently.
Exactly.
It just didn't.
I mean, obviously, I have a ritual with my girlfriend where I watch the Star Wars trailer.
Do you want to stop here? Oh, no. Okay, sorry.
Yes, and then she puts on the Leia thing and I'm Jabba the Hutt and it's this whole thing.
Maybe you should have stopped him there, Kate.
I tried to.
I watch the Star Wars trailer and then she's just so sick of it because I have to watch the latest Star Wars trailer every day in the lead up to the Star Wars and Star Wars coming out. So every day in December I will watch that Star Wars trailer.
Like the 12 Days of Christmas for you.
Exactly. And I like you say, Kate, I just love that it is this thing that connects so many people. And I guess just before we get to Spoiler Town, I want to get your thoughts on, what is it about Star Wars that makes it resonant across so many generations and across so many cultures? Like, is there anything in it that you can pick out and say, I think that's it?
It's hope. It's just hopeful. At the end of the day, that you just need to get up and anyone can fight. Like, that was ultimately the message in The Last Jedi, as anyone can fight. But for Luke, it was hope for me that like, got me into it. Because he just, the whole time, he was hoping that that everything would work. He never believed in, like, himself. He just hoped that it would work.
Yeah.
And that's what the whole Obi-Wan moment is about. It's like, I'm going to try to shoot a missile into this tiny little porthole. And then, he's like, well, I hope this works out for the best.
Gotta give it a crack.
Yeah.
You're so right. I just spent half an hour banging on trying to say what you said. No changes there. I think it's that. I think there's an element of, when we look back to who we are as kids and how we feel and the stories that kind of connect to us, it's like when you hear your favourite song and you're instantly transported to that other moment. There is an element of that, but that doesn't explain all the new fans coming on board. But I have been lucky enough, if you're going to name drop your Ewan McGregor, but I asked that absolute very question to Mark Hamill. When I
fuck, that's a good name drop.
Cried,
oh, God.
I think she
for
wins,
6 minutes,
yeah.
And also another actor who played a character in the film, Han Solo.
I've heard of him.
That's a flex.
I've heard and, he's quite popular.
I asked, particularly, in fact, Harrison's answer was the most, kind of the most resonant, because I said, what is it? And previous to that conversation, I had talked about the fact that I had tried to force my six-year-old child to love Star Wars, and he just is not interested. Yeah. He's Spider-Man
I've
all the way.
Him.
Yeah, I've tried to sell him. Yeah. And he said what he sees in all the fans is, and why that passes it on through the generation, is basically what you just said, Jordan. Mm. There's an element, it's not just about good and evil, but there's an element of there is hope, and that, but it's an individual feeling. It's not like there's hope for the planet, because there's not. It's more that within each of us, we can make that kind of difference, which is pretty sweet. As I'm not explaining this very well, I do get kind of unnecessarily emotional about it.
No such thing as unnecessarily emotional.
No. But in the context of the real world, I'm fine with it. I was just about to justify myself. Like, you know, there are bigger things in the world. And I thought, fuck it. I'm fine with it. I am actually fine. I know I get judged weirdly sometimes, and there's a lot of people that just don't kind of get it. And then I know when I'm with my people and I don't need to say anything.
No, I think that exactly. And I just think that's what I love about it as well, is that I think it's almost the most amazing, without getting too philosophical and wanky, the most amazing thing about human beings is that we can create stories that make someone weep for someone that doesn't exist and across generations.
That's right.
That's
set
incredible.
In space.
Set in space.
We've never been in space.
We've never been in space. But it's in some ways it's the most high fantasy series possible. It is fantasy in space. It's science fiction. It's science fantasy.
Yeah.
And it is this huge, grand story that does speak to something deeply human. And that's what I love about it. And it's also, there's this element that goes right through it of rebellion, resistance, like the rebel is just this icon of the resistance of power, particularly great or overwhelming power, is beautiful to us. And it's always, it's part of that hope thing, is that someone, even if they have no chance, will stand up against what's wrong.
That's right.
And even if it is overwhelming and it is so much more powerful than them, and there's something always so resonant and beautiful about that narrative. Mm. And yeah, it's... I am so with you, Kate. I watched that first Force Awakens trailer. I genuinely cried when I saw that.
Oh my god! It's,
nice.
Yeah.
I was so, and I didn't even, and I got a lot of shit about that, and I didn't even care because, and that's right. And anything that makes you feel like that, particularly as an adult, when you get all jaded and you've got fucking bills to pay and shit and tax and government and all that crap, anything that can make you feel that purely, that makes you feel like a kid again. It genuinely makes me feel as purely emotional as I did when I was 10 years old.
Yeah,
and that's what's wonderful about it, I think. And
I was just yelling a lot at that first Force Awakens trailer. I was like, oh my God, they're doing it. Yeah. We're going back. Let's go, boys.
This is it.
I wasn't crying like these fucking nerds over here.
I wasn't going to say that.
The interesting thing when you talk about the Mos Eisley canteen, but you think about the universe in general, and we think about where we are and how Hollywood's all inclusion and diversity, you just have to look at that canteen. Yeah. They are different species everywhere. Yeah. But generally speaking, you look at a lot of the fights and all of the rebels coming together, they're all completely different species. And I'm very here for that too.
I'm absolutely here for that. Let's quickly drop a spoiler warning here so we can discuss a few plot specific moments from The Mandalorian before we wrap up here.
Spoiler warning.
Okay, so yes, I am not going to lie. I was a little bit disappointed that the twist of the first episode wasn't a Boba Fett tie-in. I know, I thought that for me.
Really?
You're
really into Boba Fett.
I'm a little gay for Boba Fett, all right? He's, because The Mandalorian is obviously, and without ever saying his name, based on Boba Fett. It is everything about the Mandalorian
series. It's based on the culture, though. The Mandalorians are like that.
I didn't know anything, and I'm not embarrassed to say, about the Mandalorians until now. Yeah. I knew that Boba Fett was a Mandalorian, but I didn't know anything about the fact that they're a religion that they were warriors in the universe. So this has been a really great reveal for me. Also, and you're never going to speak to me again, you know, Boba Fett, whatevs.
Get the fuck out of here, Carol.
I knew you were going to say that.
Leave him in the sun.
I knew you were going to say that. And you talk about the fact that he's so dangerous, but he doesn't say anything. Yeah. He stands there. Sure. He's wearing a helmet. Darth Vader's wearing a helmet. It's the fucking helmet.
Oh, fuck off. Yeah. Okay, he's... Yes, I get it. I think they did it was a tragedy what they did to him in Return of the Jedi, that he just got so easily slain by Luke Skywalker.
Such a funny scene,
it's
though.
It's so terrible.
It's scary. He's so dangerous.
Exactly, I know. Build up.
Maybe that's why.
Wet fart of an ending to his
narrative.
And I wanted there to be at least some link. And I think that might still come. I think they will. Because in the expanded universe, Boba Fett escapes the Sarlacc pit by letting off a thermal detonator. He comes out. Very good trilogy of books, the Bounty Hunter trilogy, if anyone wants to go
deep
nerd.
They're not in canon anymore, though.
No, I know. So. They're all in Legends these days. But I had hoped that there would be some kind of tie on Boba Fett. And like you said, I think it is still coming. Baby Yoda, what are our thoughts? It is unbelievably cute. As I was saying to Kate before we started recording, there is a part of me that almost feels cynical about it because I feel like you couldn't cook up in a lab something that is more merchandisable than Baby Yoda. And I think that's
exactly
what they
did. Except
they
don't have any merchandise.
It's coming.
It's got to be better than the terrible T-shirts they've got out already.
Was there anything at all that disappointed you in the narrative of these first three episodes?
No.
I've just been waiting. So I think you and I are possibly, well, like I've hoped you've played it. I'm assuming you've played it. That I like that we're actually getting more Mandalore background.
Yes.
Because from the video games Knights of the Old Republic, one of your party members is a Mandalorian. All you know about him is he's gruff, he's strong, he's strategic, he's a bit dumb, but it really points out how good the Mandalorians actually are. They're from the Outer Rim. They're mercenaries, which is, you know, is in line with what Boba Fett and Mando are. So I like that we're actually getting more of that actual religion being touched on. Now that we're in spoiler territory, I like that whole thing they have for the Beskar Steel. Like it's this like royal blood to them. They're like, oh my god, we've got this steel. And then when he walked out in episode 3, like I like that Carl Weathers doesn't name him. He just calls him Mando. And then when he walked into the cantina and he's in the new armor, I was just like,
that was amazing.
And you get, because they really give you, even only a couple of shots, a sense of the value of Beskar. Without overplaying it.
Yep.
Werner Herzog, also Werner Herzog fucking chewing the scenery.
I was waiting for you to do the line.
Three episodes in a row I've gone on about it. I will watch that. I want the Mandalorian to be Werner Herzog. I want them to take off the mask. I just want Werner Herzog to be the main character. But when he slides the Beskar Steel across to him and you can see how reverently he picks it up and then he takes it to the Mandalorian Smith.
And that was just one.
And then you get the sense of how valuable Baby Yoda is when
he gets him.
And I love that he takes it and then he gets the armor, then goes rescue Baby Yoda. It's like, fuck yeah, I'm taking all this Beskar steel.
Just gonna have your money and then I'm gonna fucking take it back.
I'm gonna wear the impenetrable armor that will protect me from this firefight I'm about to have.
Exactly. I agree with you as well. I've played a lot of the Expanded Universe games. Knights of the Republic Mandalorians were great. It's sort of unclear, though, because originally the Mandalorians were a species that became a religion later on, right? It gets a bit murky.
Can I stop you as well? We talk about a religion. They're mercenaries. Is their religion actually just money?
Exactly.
But it seems collective money to me. So I thought these bounty hunters... Also, I want some clarification, and you guys will help me. So when he came back in to hand over his massive haul, and we finally got a sense there were lots of Mandalorians lurking around. I know we saw them the first time he did, but this time they were obviously far more involved. I got the sense that it was communal money. Or was it just his decision that he wanted to give, more money to the foundlings? Or whether that was part of their religion, that it's a communal pool of money and they all feed into it, which changes it because they're not operating as individuals necessarily. Also, can I ask you, there was a line about whether there was only ever to be one Mandalorian up working at any given time. Is that a fact?
Well, that's not something that's been established in the... what I think this show is doing is essentially establishing the true lore of Mandalorians. There's been a lot of different variants. There's been in Rebels, there's been in the games, which are now kind of Star Wars Legends. I think they are retconning a little bit with this because I haven't seen that written previously, particularly, and I've seen a little bit in Rebels. Mandalorians are just bands of mercenaries around. There's always this through line that there used to be a great Mandalorian sort of race that have been splintered and now they're kind of homeless.
They talk about that.
So there was a great base for Mandalorians. They're splintered. Now they're operating around. That was one thing I didn't quite like, that the Mandalorians are supposed to be super secret, but he literally just walks down some fucking stairs and there's a bunch of Mandalorians
there.
And literally sunlight coming. It's not like he went through a bunch
of
different doors.
Wasn't that secret?
Not super secret, Tim.
Can I come back? Because I want to clarify this. Sorry. There was only one Mandalorian going into that cafe and getting a fob. That didn't seem like any of the other ones had. If you had something big ticket, which obviously every single bounty hunter in the universe was given a ticket by Werner.
Yeah.
A fob, sorry. Was it fob?
Puck, I think it was called a bounty.
No,
puck.
The puck, there's the tracker thing.
Oh, the tracker. Yes, you're right.
Because there was no other Mandalorians that had one of those.
Yeah.
So whether they're considered to be the one, you know, and then I one...
Think- that's one group of Mandalore. Maybe that's like one squad, right. And he is the assigned one to go out and collect some stuff. I think that's the reading I got.
They're starting to play around a lot with, like you said, with that lore. It took a friend to remind me that what Mandalorians now are mostly orphans, which fits in with the storyline we're seeing with the Mandalorian. You know, those flashbacks we're seeing where obviously he's been left in some like trash.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then a battle droid. Battle droids? So that's a tie into the prequel trilogy. Yeah. So it's going to be the what's the name of the separatists?
The Trade Federation.
So it's the Trade Federation. It looks like the Trade Federation.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's ages ago though, which is insane.
I mean, not really in the narrative of it, right? It's the lifespan of Anakin.
It's not that many years.
It's not that long. That's a few decades back.
And you've got Yoda that lives for like 600 years.
Yes, exactly. So I will be interested to see how much they flesh out his backstory, because I think the danger with a character like the Mandalorian is you don't want to know too much about him.
No, I feel like I know enough anyway.
Yeah, and we are, and that's what I'm, that's the only concerns I have going forward is, are we going to get too much of his character, and is it going to take away from the mystique of the Mandalorian?
No, this is the cleverness of Baby Yoda. Let's not look at the cuddle ability of him. What he is a conduit to the side of the Mandalorian that we're going to fall in love with. So he's open. Well, obviously, the end of Episode 3 is that classic example, and the simplicity of little Yoda. If I wasn't in love with him already,
that was so good.
And the little noises that he makes because he's in the background. Also, lots of Yoda cam from behind his little ears,
watching
what's going on, and it's always quite silent. But when he screws off the little knob on top of the gear stick in the Mando's ship, it just broke my freaking little heart. And another thing, as a parent who hates children who ever make any noise, including little baby children, is that I love how the internet is going crazy for the fact that Baby Yoda is better than any human child.
Because
he's just silent and adorable, and those little eyes look. And quite apart from the fact, if we're in spoiler territory, he's the kind of kid that can lift the bus out of the way during rush hour traffic. Get rid of that bus and we'll go a little bit faster. I'll just do that with my baby little Yoda hand.
We talked a little bit about this last time as well. One thing the Ronin and the cub, the wolf and the cub archetype is pretty well trodden territory. So I'll be interested to
for
see
for a good reason, though.
And it's good, absolutely.
It's gonna be done right.
I'm just hoping that they move it forward a little bit, and I do hope that we actually see more bounty hunting, because that first episode of him collecting a bounty, I was fucking into it. But if that's the only actual bounty hunting we get, and it does,
you want Baby Yoda to be a little baby bounty
hunter. Yes.
Could you imagine that thing in Mando armor? That would be so good.
Again, as we established, he's got force powers.
Correct. Like, he can just hold the guy
Boom. He'd be fucking raking in the money.
I think the thing I said to friends, and I'm hoping it does come around, is I get the sense that the reason Baby Yoda was introduced is to give us an unreliable narrator. Like, I think the story is being actually told from his point of view rather than the Mandalorian's. That's why all the lines that Mandalorian delivers are just like lines that are very inherent to the Yoda character. It's stuff that drives the Mandalorian towards the Yoda character. Everything the Mandalorian's done so far has just been with regards to Baby Yoda. He hasn't really gone off track. It's all been about Baby Yoda.
Baby Yoda's the main character, and Mando's
Auxiliary. I wouldn't be surprised if we just have like this random scene where it's like maybe he is in Mandalorian armor, like in the future, and he's like, and that's how I've ended up as a bounty hunter. And then like some person's like, but you're the species we don't have a name for yet. That's why everyone calls it Baby Yoda, because we don't have a name for that species. And God rest your soul, no one remembers Yaddle from like the prequel trilogy.
Yeah, of course
not. That was just weird, though.
It was a bit weird. But with that whole lone wolf and cub thing, it's who's the actual narrator in this story so far? Because like we keep getting parts of like Mando's, but then all this other stuff keeps happening around him.
I think it's still definitely the Mandalorian, but I get what you mean. I think it's more along the lines of what Kate's saying, is that I think the Baby Yoda is the humanity of the Mandalorian, and that's the way he expresses it without detracting from the badassery of the armor and the empty helmet and the I know this is a stupid thing to
I'm just laughing about the helmet, because like they hide bloody Pedro Pascal's face under that.
I know.
Such a beautiful face. But I did make me laugh that she was like, have you ever taken off your helmet? And he's like, no. And I'm like, how do they eat, though?
How
like,
do they eat? How do they, my son said that.
Yeah, so I was like, do they come
Yoda
on.
Yoda eats funny, ain't that froggy yeah. thing?
Do they just have some complex apparatus of straws yeah, and liquefied
food? Well,
you know, social media just went horny and everyone just straight away was like, Does he take
yes,
off his mask?
I know,
you
I
don't even with the mask yeah, on. Yeah. Like, we don't even need to.
And now everyone's like horny. It's like whoever I hook up with next has to wear a Mandalorian mask.
And you, no,
I know, it's 0 to 100. Like, yeah, rule 34. There's a massive amount. Don't.
They wrote that in there too. They're like, can you make sure we mention where he doesn't take the helmet off?
Whoever dirty people are listening out there, if you make the Mandalorian, you just have to give me
stop
a
yes.
credit. You have to give me a producer credit.
Shut up. Shut up. Moving on. Can I just talk about that third ep,
yes.
which, again, for me, also I want to have to talk about the two major fight sequences
yes. yeah.
that we've had. When he's creeping around in the dark with little baby Yoda having stolen him and he's got to kill a metric fuck ton of stormtroopers.
Yes.
And you've got the whistling birds.
Very good.
So good.
Which I thought, well, that's a really lame name. And then leapt off the sofa when he let that off. I knew what he even knew what he was going to do because I knew that he had them on him. I loved all of it. Was so dark. Again, we talk about it being dark. I quite like the fact that it was realistic the way that he was able to hide. It wasn't like he was standing behind them. You know how we have a lot of fight sequences and everyone waits around to have a go?
Yeah, I find that
annoying. If all of you shot at once, he'd be dead.
Yeah.
So there was none of that. Mm. And it felt gritty, even though it wasn't particularly R-rated.
Yeah.
And I loved that it went from area to area. It was very compelling for me. And then, of course, the second major showdown when the Mandalorians just came leaping in with their jetpacks. Amazing.
Yeah. Maybe an unpopular opinion in the room, but I didn't love that moment of the Mandalorians coming.
Because you don't like jetpacks. Who are you?
Hey, get the fuck out. I don't know. It felt a little clunky. I just thought clunky's the wrong word, but I thought it was a little easy narratively. I thought they signposted quite clearly with like, oh, he's got a rivalry with this Mandalorian. Oh, we can't go above ground. And then I just thought it was a bit too much of a leap to go, oh, just kidding, we're all going to become above ground to save you. Like, I thought that they established really well that there's tension between the Mandalorians. Like, yes, they are a group.
But that doesn't mean when basically push comes to shove that they're not there for you.
Yes, I just thought, I wish there'd been a little bit more to get to that point, to get them back on side. And I just thought it was a bit easy to have them all swarm out of the ground and come to the rescue. Cavalry arrives at exactly the right moment. I thought up until that point, it had just been such a struggle for the Mandalorian. And I liked that he, as I said before, that he's lost in a lot of his fights. I would be interested to see what happened if Cal Weathers had taken Baby Yoda, and then we had a bit more of a story of, okay, if you want to take back Baby Yoda, it's not as easy as you get some fucking whistling birds and kill some stormtroopers. Like, how dedicated are you to taking Yoda
disagree.
Back?
I disagree. We talk about how paired back it is. I love we didn't have all that bullshit with the Mandalorians. They were just fucking there for him when he needed them.
Yeah.
And I was completely sweet with that. And there was nowhere else for him to go at that point. So there was nowhere, obviously, in the first few eps where he would have needed all their help because he was, first of all, he wasn't even there. He was on another planet and he was fighting that big horned fellow who was, by the way, again,
that fight,
talk,
that's
I
my favorite
loved,
fight. That's my
I
favorite
loved
fight.
It. Because it's actually really short.
Yeah.
Really short. So if it had a very intense kind of feeling to it. Because when I went and rewatched it again, I thought, oh my God, that felt so much longer when I watched it the first time.
Yeah. And like I was saying, just when he's getting dragged along and he's covered in mud, and that moment where he thinks he's going to die.
Yeah, head down.
And
tiny little dagger out. Yeah.
You get that sense of that's a religious tradition as well. You get that sense
of. Good point.
Like a gladiator would, if he knows he's going to die, offer his neck to the opponent to have an honourable death. And like you say, when he takes the Beskar steel back and he says, it wasn't an honourable kill, you can't give me the sigil.
And the
best thing about that is that it's not these blatantly delivered lines of exposition.
No.
You killed a thing. Now, per our tradition, you get to do this. I know this. Why are you saying it like that?
You've just reminded me of something. Why did he say Yoda was his enemy?
At that point, he was, right?
Why?
He was a bounty, and I think he was...
I found that really... I think there's more to it than that.
I think it's more him trying to... The cognitive dissonance of trying to separate himself from the...
Because he didn't want to care for Baby Yoda.
He didn't
want
to care about him. He wants to
How
say...
How could you not care for Baby Yoda?
Because he's the Mandalorian.
Apparently, Jordan Tenney doesn't care for Baby Yoda. the
clearly.
Start of this
How
conversation.
Can you not care? It's a complicated profession, folks.
Oh,
okay.
Complicated profession.
I knew we were going to get that eventually. Hey, just another quick one, too. Mm. You know how, obviously, we're in spoiler territory, and he shot Taika in the head.
Yeah.
Do. He he's going to come back in one of the other episodes there.
Well, there will be another. So there is a pretty famous in the expanded universe, which I hope comes in. There is a bounty hunter called IG-88 who is in things. So I think
it's a long leap from 11 to 88. That's a lot of battle droids.
I feel like they
There's
a lot of IG units, and I think they will bring in IG-88 or an equivalent. They already have with IG-11, but I think there'll be a one that sticks around. Because he's too good of a character design.
I did a little Mandalorian story for News Hub last week and managed to uncover Taika. You get him on a red carpet, there's no way of avoiding the fact he's going to say something he shouldn't. And he was at D23 last year and basically told Variety that he can't. That's obviously going to go through the series.
Yeah.
So the fact that he's shot in the first one, and I just thought, oh, that was short and sweet. I know he's coming back to direct. And I thought, oh, no, we've got to see that battle droid.
So he
basically confirmed
it.
I hope
we get like an IG-66 who is just basically Korg as a bounty hunter.
Hey,
Mando. Oh, I'll help you with your bounty.
All right, guys. Well, we could probably talk about Star Wars for the rest of the day.
When are we going to start talking about Star Wars?
I thought this was just a warm-up. Guys, it has been an absolute fucking pleasure to speak to you both. Jordan, Tinney, thank you so much for joining
me. I have spoken.
God damn it! God damn it! Both of us could have done that, Kate Roger, and he got there first.
You see,
there's still one line there. Somebody's going to get outroed with it.
I'm depressed now that I didn't pluck that low-hanging fruit. I mean, I guess this is the way, you know?
Kate! Oh my God!
Well, Kate, what do you got?
Fuck you.
Thank you so much for allowing us to do this dumb podcast, Mackie Wicks. Thank you for editing all of the crap out of this, Asher Bastion. Thank you for listening. If you've made it to this point, you're a fucking trooper. Thank you so much. We will see you again next week.